Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 129 for the week beginning Monday, the 4th of October 2010, with me, Andy Zaltzman, unquestionably and verifiably here in London and in New York City, USA. It's John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Andy, we had a book signing for Earth, the book available at all good bookstores.
Oh, for your book, not my book.
That's right, yeah. We didn't sign yours. we did it at Barnes & Noble this week, and a lot of people turned up. Yep. I signed many books, met some buglers, one of whom shouted from the back of the room at one point, "Colonel Gaddafi says hello." But due to the UN being in session, there was a moment, just a moment, when I suddenly got worried that the Libyan delegation might actually have turned up. "Colonel Gaddafi says hello. And he'd like to ask you a couple of questions about why it is you find him so inherently amusing. Please come with us."
That was actually interesting. You say that the original title of Bob Dylan's famous song from Blood on the Tracks.
Oh, really?
"If You See Her, Say Hello" was, in fact, "If You See Colonel Gaddafi, Say Hello."
But, he might be in Tangiers.
He might be. His record company got onto him and he caved, I'm afraid.
We also had a few 9/11 conspiracy theorists who turned up to shout things at the book signing, Andy. And I think they were mistaking us both for a news organisation and also for people who gave a shit about what they had to say. But one of them followed me out of the bookshop hours later. He was much quieter and more polite than the others. And as we walked along, with him calmly making his case and me disagreeing with it as gently as I could, at one point I said to him, "Look, I think we've reached that point where we're just not going to agree with each other, so it might be best if we just leave it here." And we walked on in silence for 10 to 15 seconds or so, and then he said, "So, what else is going on?" I think that means I win, Andy. I think if I force a conspiracy theorist into small talk, I think you chalk that up as a victory.
He reckons, was he one of the ones that reckons it was Lee Harvey Oswald?
That's right. I think, to be honest, I tuned out.
So this is Bugle issue 129. 129, of course, the only words uttered by Neville Chamberlain before his disqualification from the 1922 European hide-and-seek championships. And let's hope this episode does not go, not end up like its number-sake, the LZ-129 Hindenburg, going down spectacularly in flames and signalling the imminent end of podcasting as a form of human communication, whilst presaging the start of an appalling global conflict just over 2 years later that unleashed a tide of slaughter unmatched in human history. So it's quite a lot of pressure on the back end of this podcast.
Wow, yeah. Just really turned up the stakes a bit.
And apologies for the technical issues with last week's episode, which seemed to have had what its management team are calling an ultimately resolved argument with iTunes, but which the Gutter Press have described as a full-on Barney. I hope it's been fixed. We've disappeared off iTunes. I think if you subscribe, it's fine, but if you're looking for it, it's not there. So if you're not listening to this podcast and have never listened to The Bugle before and are trying to find it on iTunes, you won't be successful. So I'm sorry.
We've gone covert. It's a covert Bugle, Andy. We're a Black Ops podcast.
As always, some sections of this week's Bugle are going straight in the bin. This week, a home slapstick section, including advice on the best, least visible substances to leave on the kitchen floor overnight so that when, early the next morning, your spouse, parents or child, blearily eyed, stumbles into the room to make a cup of coffee, they are guaranteed to slip and fall painfully. Also, we advise you on the maximum weight, hardness and sharpness of objects to leave precariously balanced on top of slightly open doors. And we ask the ultimate philosophical question: if someone walks through a plate glass window and no one else is there to see it, is it still slapstick?
Top story this week, leadership! Andy, when you think of leadership, three images come straight to mind. Yep. Terry Butcher bleeding from the head in an England shirt against Sweden in 1989.
Yeah, of course.
Kim Jong-il standing in front of a massive picture of himself inspecting a procession of nuclear warheads.
Yeah.
And finally, an Eastern European man with a scar on his face sitting in a swivel chair stroking a hairless cat whilst his henchmen set up an elaborate but flawed execution device to dispatch a secret agent.
You're talking about Ivan Lendl there?
That's right. One of those figures, Andy, looks as if he's about to begin handing his maniacal mantle over. Kim Jong-il, Bugle favourites, Captain Crazy himself, has reportedly appointed his eventual successor, who will one day soon have some very unstable clown shoes to fill. So, who did he pick? Was it a blind applications process with each candidate anonymously submitting a CV so that no favouritism would be possible? Did he appoint a headhunter to find one of the most capable international politicians and make them an offer they couldn't refuse? No! No, instead he went with the classic appoint your son technique, Andy. It's worked throughout history. To be precise, the North Korean Workers' Party held a full delegation conference for the first time in more than 44 years, and there was a lot of jockeying going on behind the scenes. One journalist wrote that at the best of times, North Korean politics can look a bit like a game of retirement home musical chairs with a dangerous twist. Pretty spectacularly dangerous twist, too. The geriatric winner of the musical chairs game not only gets a chair to sit in, but also a shit ton of nuclear weapons to play with as well.
Well, you've got to have a party bag.
Why not?
Well, they did want to go for James Wolfensohn, the former head of the World Bank, former president of the World Bank, but he declined the offer, saying he wanted to spend more time with his collection of toy cars. So instead, Kim Jong, increasingly and dangerously ill, has gone for his youngest son, Kim Jong-un. What do we know about him, John? He's a pretty mysterious figure. What do we know about him? Apart from the fact that he loves to party. Sorry, he loves the party. The Workers' Party of Korea. Absolutely loves it. From an admin point of view, it's a doozy. And incidentally, the word doozy, do you know where it comes from, John?
I don't, Andy.
It comes from the family of 16th century French architects, the Androuet du Cerceau family.
Does it?
And du Cerceau, so du see. So yeah, he was a chateau specialist, and when his fans saw a chateau that they liked, they would admiringly nod their French heads, or têtes, as they like to call them, and say, "Ah, bon. Ça, c'est un douci, vraiment, quel douci." And it came to refer to any ace-grade building and then any top-notch thing of any sort. So there's a little bit of etymology for you there, viewers.
Andy, you are an informer.
You cut that off short, John.
You skiddly diddly biddly what I'm saying. I'm looking bum bum down. The most significant event...
Sounds better in that accent.
...of the conference was the promotion of, as you say, of Kim Jong-un to the rank, at this point, of four-star general. Among the other promotions given to him was the role of deputy chairman.
They read like a five, though. He's a bit disappointed.
That's right. He was also promoted to the role of deputy chairman of the Central Military Commission of the Workers' Party, and also was given membership of the Central Committee. Now, critics in North Korea, Andy, might say, but Kim Jong-un has absolutely no military or political experience whatsoever. Is this a good idea? But that would very much be the last thing they would say, Andy, before they were thrown into the back of a van and never heard from again. But also, to be fair, I think that Kim Jong-un's response would be, yes, you're right, I have no political or military experience, but on the other hand, I did come from Kim Jong-il's balls. And who among my opponents can really say that? And it turns out that's a pretty persuasive argument in Pyongyang. Although there are actually a number of other people who also come from Kim Jong-il's balls who were in the running, but it seems like Kim Jong-un has become the favoured son. He's Kim Jong-il's eldest son, Kim Jong-nam, was deported from Japan a few years ago and reportedly said he had no interest in becoming leader. Then there's Kim Jong-chol, who apparently is viewed by his father as being, and I quote, too feminine and unmanly, essentially painting him as a homophobic 1970s stereotype of a gay man. They only just stop short of saying he wears spangly light blue suits and walks around all day saying, "Ooh, ducky," to everyone he meets. Stop acting like that, son. You're disgracing the Republic. Ooh, listen to her. I'll disgrace you in a minute. Kim Jong-il's former chef said that Kim Jong-un is actually the perfect fit, as he's apparently just like his father, saying he has superb physical gifts, is a big drinker, and never admits defeat. Well, that's reassuring, Andy. He's a drunk megalomaniac. Sounds perfect.
Superb physical gifts. Could he even challenge Kim Jong-il's record score on the golf course?
I don't know. Was I don't know if that's possible.
35 under par, wasn't it? I think
it was. It was a hell of a round.
A lot of holes in one, that's all I remember.
Also, around 10 million portraits of Kim Jong-un are being readied for distribution by the authorities to hang alongside those of his father and grandfather.
God, that sounds like our poster campaign for one of our Edinburgh shows.
Exactly, yeah. They've also even already picked out his nickname. Kim Jong-il's father was known as the Great Leader. Kim Jong-il himself was called the Dear Leader. And apparently Kim Jong-un is to be known as the Brilliant Comrade. It's not bad as a nickname, but I feel they could have done quite a bit better, Andy. So I've come up with a list of other nicknames which I think they might like to consider. And I'm willing to offer these up for free. Here we go. Daddy Big Balls. Captain Fantastic. The Big Kahuna. Kim Jong Undefeatable. Kim Jong Unbelievable. Kim Jong Unstoppable. The Lady Machine. Field Marshal Golden Penis. Senor Marvelous. The Power Hammer. The Crazy Tornado. The Asian Hurricane. The Pyongyang Piranha. And Baron Bootylicious. Pick any one of those. It's better than the Great Comrade, I'll tell you that.
I think you're just hanging those out there to see what people think you should adopt as your hip-hop name.
That is true.
Of course, if he was an English footballer, he'd just be called Kimsey. So maybe there you go with that. Well, it's not just North Korea that has a younger brother as its leader in waiting. We have here as well, John, here in the UK. Do you remember it? Do you remember that place?
It rings a bell. Yeah. Pretty small bell, though. Yeah.
He is Prime Minister in waiting. Ed Miliband, the new leader of the Labour Party, PM in waiting, might be waiting quite a long time, possibly have its reservation cancelled. But he has won the Labour leadership contest, which began months and months, possibly even years ago, and has been followed with almost no interest by the entire British population, apart from a small handful of political correspondents who have thought it is the greatest story since Jesus started doing his magic tricks. So Ed Miliband is the leader. He's the younger brother of the pre-race favourite David Miliband, who lost and has proved quite awkward. He's now quit frontline politics in order to keep out of his brother's way, essentially. Uh-huh. The Conservatives responded to David Miliband's quitting politics by saying that it spoke volumes about the direction Ed Miliband was taking the Labour Party in. And it doesn't, John, it doesn't speak any volumes about that, not even one volume about it. He's clearly left because it would be, frankly, awkward to stay in the background, thinking it really should have been me. And he's basically quit because the media in this country is simply too juvenile, borderline delinquent, not to just crap on endlessly about tension between these two brothers. And frankly, I'm glad he's lost, David Miliband, because for my money, he is simply too young to lead a political party. He's 45, which is 5 years older than his brother who did win, and he should be starting his political career now, not finishing it. There are some jobs in which youth is unquestionably an asset, even a necessity, being a gymnast, for example. Mm-hmm. There might be, as they say, so often in sports commentary, no substitute for experience. But there is definitely a substitute for rheumatoid arthritis, and that is not having rheumatoid arthritis. Being a chimney sweep, similarly, suits the young. You need flexibility, yes. And you need to still find climbing up stuff exciting for its own sake, because you're not doing it for the money. But politics does not need to be the preserve of identikit, lozenge-smooth 40-year-olds who have never had a proper job in their lives. And that is what we've now got in Britain. That's what, and also, even worse than that, two of the three main party leaders are now commonly referred to by shortenings of their first names. Ed, Nick Clegg, and even David Cameron is quite often referred to as Dave. And this takes all the dignity and gravitas, such as it was, out of politics. Would the 11th century professional king Edward the Confessor have carved out his market-leading reputation for being the go-to guy for confessing stuff if he'd called himself Ed the Confessor? He wouldn't. Would Pericles have wowed the Athenian crowns with his superstar speech-making in 430 BC if he'd allowed himself to be dubbed Pezza by the press? No. And would Othello have been such a global smash hit for little Billy Shakespeare if he'd juvenile himself, O unit? Yes, but he'd have had to wait another 400 years for it to really hit home with the public.
It's Ed Miliband's own fault, Andy, that people are not interested in him, because he's put too much information out there. He should take a tip from Kim Jong-un and be much more mysterious about it. For instance, there's so many details out there that I happen to know now that he used to be able to do the Rubik's Cube in 1 minute 20 seconds. Yep. And with one hand as well. Why do I... I'm not interested. If I
you
know
should
that,
be interested in
there's
that.
There's nothing else to know. I'll tell you why I'm not interested, Andy. Because this just... And I think questions are now going to swarm around him until the British public see him do the Rubik's Cube in 1 minute 20 seconds with one hand as well. Otherwise, it's just another empty promise from politicians, Andy.
Well, I think it'll be reassuring to have a Prime Minister who could do the Rubik's Cube in 1 minute 20 seconds because, you know, people are going to be sitting there thinking, you know, this guy, he looks like a schoolboy, he moves like a schoolboy, and he talks like a schoolboy. How is he going to deal with hugely complex issues of economics and foreign policy and domestic policy when he has to make all these different parts of the political system work in different directions to create a coherent whole? Oh, hang on. He could do the Rubik's Cube in 1 minute 20 seconds when he was a kid. That's basically... Politics, basically, is just a giant Rubik's Cube, John. He has already been childishly and persistently dubbed as Red Ed for two reasons.
It rhymes. That's a key reason.
That is right? That is reason number one.
Okay. Red. Should that not be reason number two as well, and you then have a third reason?
No. Okay. Three reasons. One, Red rhymes with two.
Yeah.
Ed rhymes with red.
Okay, there you go.
And as we know, British newspapers are like two-year-old children. They like words that sound like other words being put next to each other. I remember when my daughter was 2 years old, the same age as mental age as the British newspapers. Actually, that is extremely insulting to my daughter. Anyway, I said, darling, do you want a sandwich? And she said, no, Daddy, I want a sandwich wamwich. And then laughed uncontrollably as if God himself had just broken wind. And I thought, one day... She will be a sub-editor on a tabloid newspaper, deliberately trying to undermine the level of democratic discourse in this nation to make cheap political points supporting her paper's own vested interests. What a sweetie. And reason number three, John, is... Yep. The reason he's dubbed Red Ed is because Ed Miliband is a raging, full-on, tank-driving, cannon-pointing communist with Lenin tattooed on one ball, Stalin on the other, and a wang that looks like Trotsky. And evidence for his redness have included... Well, his first name rhyming with the word red. But it doesn't stop there. He's also in favour of stuff like a slightly fairer society. And he was backed by Britain's notoriously pyrotechnic unions, who, when they aren't too busy looking after the rights and interests of their members, have started no fewer than 10 full-on revolutions in the last 40 years. Sorry, who have started 10 fewer than 10 full-on revolutions in the last 40 years. It's going to stick, John. You can't get rid of a tag like that, no matter what he does. He will always be Red Ed, and he sounded wearied already when he made his speech at the conference on his first major speech as party leader this week. He realised that I think that tag was with him for the rest of his career, and he told the media to grow up, a request that will fall on the deafest of all possible ears, as if he'd said it to a late period Beethoven whilst Beethoven had ear mufflers on and was using a pneumatic drill to play the particularly loud bits of his Appassionata Sonata on a specially amplified mega piano. Other leader news now, and John, your old buddy, Pervez Musharraf,
yes.
Very much the former president of Pakistan, has launched a new political party.
Oh, good thing.
He has given birth to the All Pakistan Muslim League, which does sound less like a political party and more like a very devout table tennis competition.
Yes, absolutely. I like the sound of it.
And he's not expected really to challenge for power in the near future, if only because, A, Pervez Musharraf lives in exile in London, and B, he is unbelievably unpopular in Pakistan. And C, is apparently holding a steady position in the high-up jihadi group's Christmas lists. Sorry, hit lists. It's a fine line between those two, as Lee Harvey Oswald's girlfriend can testify. She just wanted a JFK action figure from Santa Claus. All went horribly wrong. There you go, two Lee Harvey Oswald jokes already in this podcast.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
One came out unexpectedly. One was scheduled.
Like the Olsen twins.
Have you met them yet? In
no, I haven't. I haven't, what? Andy.
How come?
No. I don't know. Our paths haven't crossed.
Wrong
parties. Living completely different lives, I think.
I just assume it's just one great big social whirl for you now.
That is a huge assumption based on sand. Billionaire news now. Andy, if I was a billionaire, or, well, I should say, when I am a billionaire, Andy, I plan to spend my time...
Guru 2.
That's right. It's just one movie away. I plan to spend my time building a solid gold ski slope with gold dust powder snow and ski down on skis made from diamonds before breaking 32 bones in my body and realising that I've completely lost my grip on reality. That's the dream. Unfortunately, not all billionaires think that way, Andy. And American billionaires Bill Gates and Warren Buffett were in Beijing this week, hosting a dinner for some of China's richest people. At a news conference, the pair said they discussed philanthropy in China and how to encourage people to give more to charity, as well as, I presume, rolling around on the floor on piles of yuan.
Yep, like the modern-day Robin Hood and Jesuses that they are. And incidentally, Jesus, he would have been more impressive if he'd been a bit more like Buffett and Gates, if he'd actually earned some serious wage first and then given it away himself instead of just preaching to people to do it.
Yeah.
Really, with hindsight, Jesus should have spent his 20s and 30s using his magic powers to play the markets. And when he'd banked a few hundred million shekels, then give it all away at a press conference.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then start the magic, start the turning the water into wine, the dogs into rubbish bins, and the women into sex objects. Oh, sorry, that wasn't Jesus. That was Hollywood. Sorry, I'm always getting mixed up.
Bill Gates said that he'd heard some very interesting ideas there, but he said that China's economic reforms had only recently started to produce rich people, and many of them were still unsure as to what to do with their money. A Chinese billionaire said that giving and helping has been part of Chinese culture for 5,000 years, but charity has only really developed in China over the last 30 years since we introduced economic reforms. I think it's only fair that they get both sides of the capitalist argument, Andy. Yes, by all means, listen to Bill Gates talk about giving away at least half your wealth to worthy causes and setting up charitable organisations that can do good long after you're gone. But also then, listen to Donald Trump talk to you about gold bathtubs. Then make your own decision.
Well, it was a very appropriate setting for this dinner. It was held, apparently, in a replica French-style castle in Beijing.
Okay.
As if to say, look, you guys, when you make a lot of money, there's two things you could do.
Yeah.
You could spend it on building replica chateaux in places where they have no context, just for the hell of it. You could even take Dubai on and start building a two-mile-high laundromat shaped like a rutting swan, just because you can and no one has told you not to. Or you could spend it on not letting people starve to death and or die of easily preventable diseases. Your call. Or build John's massive gold ski slope.
And wait for people to say, how big a chateau are we talking about?
In other capitalism news, American scientists have developed a vaccine against socialist tendencies. Amidst increasing concern in large parts of conservative America about mild strains of socialism or other left-leaning idealisms breaking out amongst teenagers, do-gooders and presidents, the boffins at Wedge Corp have fused plasma from the blood of the famously ethically ambivalent bonobo monkey with the DNA of former Lehman Brothers chief executive Richard Fuld to create capitoplasm. A course of just 12 quarterly injections of capitoplasm between the ages of 1 and 5 can inoculate a child against leftist tendencies and lily-livered liberalism for life. It is hoped that the vaccine should be universally available to all children in America by 2016, before being rolled out across the rest of the world in time to ensure unending cycles of short-term boom and bust throughout the latter half of the 21st century.
Bonobo's not a monkey.
What is it then?
A bonobo is a type of ape. Apes aren't a type of monkeys. There are five types of great ape. The bonobo is one.
If it looks like a monkey and sounds like a monkey, it's a f***ing monkey.
I just can't agree with you. I just can't agree with that. It's just one of those things.
You come waltzing into this show as if you f***ing own it. We've been here for 3 years.
Calling bonobos monkeys.
Yeah. Every episode. If you play them all backwards, it's all in there.
Peace news now. Andy, great news. War is over. More specifically, World War One is finally over.
Phew.
Germany has just made its final reparations payment as laid out in the Treaty of Versailles in 1919. And with that, I hope Germany has learnt its lesson from World War One and that they won't let anything like that happen ever again. Congratulations to everyone involved, both with the treaty and with the Great War itself. And what a great war it was.
Great war. I'm pretty relieved because I've certainly been conscientiously objecting since 1916, really, when I became old enough to join the army, and I'm really running out of excuses. Bild, Germany's biggest-selling newspaper, said, on Sunday, the last bill is due, and the First World War finally, financially at least, terminates for Germany. Hang on there! Financially, at least. Does that not more than hint that Bill thinks that militarily this war is still very much on? Either their newspaper has been ringing in sick every day for the last 92 years, or they are finally revealing the underlying German strategy. It's a 100 years war, John. We're now in year 96. Strap in.
That makes sense. Finally, that makes sense, because Trace Gallagher on Fox News, Trace Gallagher is at best a cartoon newsman. He cannot read news
if you're called Trace.
Yeah, well, you can sing
Honky Tonk Badonkadonk.
He must have pulled that phrase and put it into his prompter, because he trailed off his story saying this Sunday finally Germany finally plays off the tab, which means that World War One for Germany is over, at least financially. And I was watching it thinking, what the f*** is he talking about? What does he know about World War One that he's not telling us? Is the bloody trench warfare raging on, Andy? I could have sworn that just before the camera cut away from Trace, he pulled out a rifle and screamed at the newsroom, "Get behind your desks, boys! The Hun is on the move!"
If the World War One is over, does that mean that Wilfred Owen can stop being dead again?
I think so. I think he can come up from hiding.
It has taken rather a long time to pay this off. I guess it's like doing a show at the Edinburgh Festival. You know, you put a lot of money in. It takes you ages to pay it off, and at the end of it, well, you're not really sure if it was worth it. You can persuade yourself, you know, if I hadn't started that First World War, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Right, exactly. And so, it means just 92 years later, the tab is finally paid off. And, of course, the good news is that this means that we should have paid for the Iraq War in full by 2102. So put that in your diary, everyone. Solvent by next century. That's the aim.
But also, looking at the state of the German economy in comparison with the rest of Europe, I think we can now properly confirm that World War One was a lost leader.
Well, it just goes to show the level of fiscal responsibility that Germany has, Andy. They're so conscientious now about paying off debts. They're even paying off debts that no one even remembers anymore. Did anyone know that they were sticking to the payment plan? Or were they just turning up and giving checks to us every year and we weren't sure what it was for? Oh, well, thanks, Germany. Was this for something you bought from us on eBay? Was anyone really holding their feet to the fire in that debt nearly a century later? Have we been sending the goons round every January? Hello, hello, Germany, who's been a naughty boy? Responsible for the deaths of 9 million people, eh? Well, that's going to cost you. Why don't you put the reparations in an envelope and we'll see you next year? Feature section now, theme parks. Scream if you want to get crazier. This feature section, as you will see, will also function very much as a stupid building update. The United Arab Emirates have just opened a $100 million water park just an hour's drive from Dubai. The park will offer its anticipated 10,000 daily visitors the world's largest man-made waterfall called Penguin Falls, with 100,000 gallons of water cascading down the 120-foot feature every minute. This week, after a 28-month delay, it finally opened. It wasn't clear what that 28-month delay was for, Andy, whether it was 28 months of them sitting around saying, should we be doing this? Is this a good idea? Are we making a joke of an impending ecological Armageddon until someone eventually said, let's do it. Let's just do it. Penguins in the desert, guys. Who doesn't want to see penguins in the desert, apart from penguins?
It might have been that the delay was caused by them, you know, arguing over exactly how f***ing stupid to make their new stupid building.
Could be.
$100 million theme park in the desert, and the theme is ice.
The Gulf News wrote that the park tells a story of how penguins find their new home in the coastal waters of the Arabian Gulf. Does that story mention that one of the reasons the penguins had to move there was that people kept building enormous stupid water parks in the middle of the f***ing desert? OK, so what about some theme park news from Lithuania, Andy? Well, I mean, you knew that Dubai was going to go big. It's what they do. So which way is Lithuania going to go? That's right. They're going to go depressing. A theme park experience has opened up in Lithuania called Survival Drama in a Soviet Bunker. And it's become popular with everyone from stag parties to corporate outings. It's designed to give people a sense of what the experience of living under the brutal repression of Soviet Russia was like, prompting accusations that this is nothing more than a cynical gulag theme park. The person behind the project says, usually, at least one member of each party faints, and there are always people crying. The older ones, mostly. It's intense, because in 2 or 3 hours, we make them feel what it's like to suffer under Soviet oppression. I'm sold, Andy. How long is the line? And how tall do you have to be to go on this ride? A journalist wrote about the experience. Apparently the tickets cost £25. And here are some highlights of what you get for that. Strap in. We're led into the interrogation room where a lieutenant employs psychological tactics to wear us down. Although Ruta translates for us, being screamed at in an alien language makes the experience all the more frightening. Well, it would. But it's nice that they provide a translation so that you can understand exactly what the interrogator is threatening you with. He goes on to say, a single desk lamp is pointed towards us as the lieutenant, wielding a standard-issue service pistol, which he had earlier fired into the air to intimidate us, says we can never escape the KGB. He pulls us one by one onto a metal stool to make us sign confessions. Hold on. He fired a gun in the air. Is this theme park insured? They're firing live rounds into the ceiling. You're actually being tortured. That's what's happening. How many people going there are lonely Western businessmen with strange sexual fetishes? I'm guessing a lot, Andy. I bet that over half the people in that bunker when they're being interrogated have boners. It gets even worse. He goes on to say, one teacher fights back the tears as she refuses to comply with the bullying officer. Her reaction is moving, and suddenly the historical context of the reenactment becomes all the more resonant. Ruta translates, he's saying that she'll be in trouble if she does not sign. Her children will be brought here and hanged, and she will have to watch. Now you're threatening to kill people's family. Euro Disney is starting to look really tame in comparison, Andy. They're going to need to spice it up to be competitive. Maybe they should have Goofy threaten to beat children's pets to death in front of them.
This is quite realistic, though. It's so realistic, in fact, that when you're queuing up to get in, you're encouraged to shop any Jewish members of your party who can then be put in a windowless, darkened room representing death before the rest of you go in to experience Soviet Russia, given that most Jews in Lithuania didn't quite make it that far, as my family would have testified, were they to have made it that far.
He finally says, the journalist and customer, finally, we're allowed to go. Before our release, we're given vodka to steady our nerves, while incongruously jovial music plays to a backdrop of multicoloured disco lights. I presume there's also a gift shop afterwards, Andy. Get a copy of your signed confession, a photo of you breaking down in tears during the interrogation, and a stuffed toy KGB officer.
Well, you say that, that's how Yuri Andropov used to start his day. Massive disco. It's the only reason he could get out of bed in the morning. Your emails now, and this one comes in on the very important subject, what the f***, Chris? And it's from Kevin in Havertown, PA. Where's that?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. That's a silly place. Pennsylvania. What was that? Where the pencil comes from? Is it?
Well, it's where Dracula used to get his pencils.
Kaboom! And those pencils particularly like looking at themselves in the mirror a lot. To it, just
no. Why did he say that?
What?
F*** you, Chris, or whatever it was.
Oh, right, yeah, sorry, yeah. Chris, where's my f***ing bugle? I see it on the RSS feed, which means you've recorded it. So don't give me more bullshit about how someone had a family emergency and you couldn't record it. This is why everyone hates you, Chris.
It's a good point.
You are
well
very
put.
Much being blamed for the technical issues. Yes. Technical problems.
I mean, I run iTunes.
Yeah, you run iTunes it's and you run Times Online.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard work running
they
iTunes.
They know full well that your actual name is Chris iTunes.
Yes.
And that you're heir to the iTunes fortune.
To be fair to Kevin from Havertown in Pennsylvania, he writes, P.S. I'm sure you're a very nice guy and are just experiencing technical difficulties, but I've had a f***ing shitty week. I need to distract myself from the crushing inevitability of death with a wholly unnecessary string of shitty puns, otherwise I'll have to go back to drinking. Well, so next time I start doing puns, John, don't just sit there groaning. Just remember, I am saving people from the bottle.
I'm pleased he's having a bad week. It makes his one off.
We have an email here from Dane. The subject line, moped riding simians extending the digits. Well, that's... I mean, that is a great subject line to an email. He goes on to say, Mr. Zaltzman and the apparently less fecund Mr. Oliver, I cannot understate the amusement generated by looking down at my two-year-old's pyjama top and seeing this embroidery. Admittedly, I should have been reading her a bedtime story and tucking her in, but I felt obliged to reach for my camera instead. Bikini-wearing monkeys riding underpowered motorcycles should always smile when flicking the bird.
Well, it's fantastic, the embroidery on this. I will attempt to put this... I know I say this almost every week, that I'll attempt to put a picture up on Twitter. And it's not that I've failed to do so. It's that I've forgotten to do so.
Right. And in doing that, have failed, yeah. Andy. I mean, you have failed.
Well, I'm 0 for 0.
Right.
It's not like I'm 0 for 10. I'm 0 right. for 0.
So what are you going to try now?
Yeah, I'm going to try and do it now. But it is an embroidery of a little monkey in a bikini riding a moped.
It's very fun.
Appearing to flick the bird.
It's a drive-by bird flip from, looks like a very well-mannered monkey.
A little cartoon monkey in a bikini top. Okay, so...
Well, this is riveting.
You can read the rest of the email while I'm...
Okay, so you're gonna tap away,
yep.
Or whatever it is.
Yep.
Yeah,
I don't know. And just sacrificing a goat to Zeus to make sure it goes well.
He goes on to say, what to get Matilda for Christmas or festival related to other religion of your choice at the end of December? I think you know. He was in admiration of sweatshop workers who can still maintain a sense of humour despite the threat of the rod and impending starvation. Dane Chalkley. So, Andy, how's it going?
I'm not saying I've finished it yet.
Have you even managed to start the process yet?
Look, if you had been so worried about stuff like this, you wouldn't have left this country leaving me unattended.
Unsupervised.
Yeah. I think I've done it wrong. Sport now!
Sport!
And, the Ryder Cup. It's raining at the Ryder Cup as we record this. Very unlucky that it rained in Wales in October.
So strange, that.
Reminiscent of when the World Whitewater Rafting Championships were held in the middle of a particularly flat bit of the Atacama Desert, and things didn't really go too well there. The highlight so far has been the opening ceremony. Corey Pavin, the American captain, forgot to introduce Stuart Sink, one of his players. He said that completes the US Ryder Cup team. And Stuart Sink was still sitting there in his chair looking like he was about to cry, like a kid who'd been forgotten by his parents at school. And Pavin did later clarify the situation, saying that just because I forgot to introduce Stuart Sink does not mean necessarily that I want to have him killed. If I wanted Sink dead, he'd be dead. I will reassess my attitude towards Sink's continued existence after the end of the Ryder Cup.
If I wanted Sink dead, he'd be dead. And Stuart knows that.
And in the Commonwealth Games updates, the authorities in New Delhi, where the Commonwealth Games are supposed to be taking place imminently despite the building problems, they've deployed a contingent of large, black-faced, langur monkeys to scare away other, smaller monkeys.
They've outsourced their security operation to monkeys, haven't they? Oh,
this is like Afghanistan and the Mujahideen all over again. It's going to end in tears. So just time for a quick bugle forecast. Will the planet survive until next week? John?
I mean, I wouldn't put money on it.
Well, I certainly wouldn't, because of the number... There's an amazing number of number 129 related coincidences. This is Bugle 129. On Thursday this week, the Office of Fair Trading told 129 debt management firms they could use their consumer credit licences.
Mm-hmm.
On last Friday, just minutes after we'd finished recording Bugle 128, US Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced investment schemes to build and enhance libraries in guess how many rural communities across America? 129. And on Sunday, a pedestrian bridge in Alcoa, Tennessee, is scheduled to have its steel superstructure plonked on top of its concrete supports. But not just any bridge, a bridge over highway, can you guess what number? 129. Three numerical coincidences like that, John. You know what that means? Apocalypse.
No. Apocalypse, wow. Okay.
We will all be dead by Wednesday.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, have a great final few days, buglers.
Yep. Eat well. Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's uploaded. It's done it. Oh, I feel like Linford Christie winning the 100 metres in Barcelona in 1992.